Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
My debut book, Manifest, 7 Steps to Living Your Best Life, is out now, and you can order it from Amazon, Waterstones, or any other major bookshop. In this book, you will learn absolutely everything that you need to know about manifestation. You will understand that it really is a self-development practice to live by, to empower yourself, to step into your light, to become the best version of yourself that exists, and to attract anything you want into your life. I cannot wait for you all to read it. And if you love it, please don't forget to rate and review on Amazon, Audible, or wherever you purchased it from. Thank you so much and happy manifesting. Hello and welcome back to The Moments That Made Me with me, your host, Roxy Nafusi. I am here in the studio today with Andrew and Simon Salter, who are two brothers on a mission to bring functional mushrooms to the Western world, and they are the founders of Dirty. I've been doing loads with you guys. I feel like anyone that follows me will know you guys already. But I'm very excited to be sat here to talk about your three defining moments. We only have an hour.
Are you sure?
And I actually don't know how the fuck I'm going to keep
one
you guys.
An hour. Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to see what we can do. So, hi.
Oh, hey. This is definitely not scripted. Hi.
How are you?
I'm feeling good. I'm feeling. Well, we just spoke offline about something that happened recently, but I'm feeling good. Interestingly enough, I don't want to go off course, but I am. But
there started.
Here goes the first rabbit hole. I believe there's usually Mondays can be a very kind of hard thing to get up to after a weekend of escaping from the, you know, the white noise of the week. And for the last like year, Mondays has been one of my favorite days.
Same.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell me about why yours first.
I just love my job, so I fucking love Mondays. Because it brings such a new energy. Yeah. Actually, I had a really shitty weekend. I had really bad anxiety this weekend, and so I was really excited for Monday. And actually, I do feel better today.
Really? Mm. Usually some people kind of fall to the Monday blues.
Mm.
But what...
Anyway.
You don't want to talk about the anxiety.
Nah.
It's a new day.
It's a new day. So we basically kick straight in on this podcast.
I don't know
if you've ever listened to it.
No.
It's quite good. Anyway, so we kick straight into your first defining moment.
Oh, really?
Mm.
Oh, well, sod anything I was going to say about Monday mornings or what I did this very morning with the sun that rose. You want to go straight into it?
Yeah.
Well, I have to go to my younger brother to kind of kick it off, because then I'll find another rabbit hole.
First defining moment. Mm. Okay, so... how long ago was it?
Oh, wait, just to clarify, that the audience know who's talking when. Mm.
The bearded one is speaking.
The one with all the hair.
No, when you say that, it sounds like you're Andrew.
Okay,
you need to clarify.
Okay, go mute. I'm Simon.
You're Simon.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I'm Andy.
Yeah, okay, great.
Okay.
It sounds the same still, right?
It still sounds the same.
Okay, is this recorded on video as well?
Yeah.
Okay, then
we'll see. I've never recorded one on video before. You are the first.
Mm-hmm. Oh, brilliant.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know if I'll put it out. Anyway, go.
Okay,
so,
go, Andy.
We met a lady. Her name's Wendy. I think I was probably in my very early 20s, maybe even younger, actually, maybe about 19.
You were definitely younger.
She told us about, she lost her son to testicular cancer at the age, she'd probably been the same age, 19. He basically lost his life because of embarrassment. He was too ashamed to tell anyone he had a lump in his testicle. He had testicular cancer. He left it 6-7 weeks too late. And unfortunately, it spread violently through his body. Although a devastating story, and it really got us, because, you know, we didn't realize you get cancer that young at that point. It was the fact that he was too ashamed to actually say something that cost him his life, because actually testicular cancer, which affects young men, is 100% curable if you catch it early. And actually, you know, most charities, they go out there and they use fear marketing. They scare you about cancer. You know, they talk about stats and everything like that because they want to raise money. The best way to raise money is to use fear marketing. But actually, the cure in the sense of testicular cancer is actually awareness. You know, if you check regularly for signs of testicular cancer, which is literally lumps and bumps or any irregularities in your balls.
I was just taking a deep breath, sorry. However, now I can come in. But the story is very close to our heart, because to his unfortunate demise is no difference to how we would have potentially approached the same scenario. I think the mentality, I thought, for men or boys at that time was to kind of disregard any irregularities going on down below and just carry on fence wildly and in the world. But it was merely her cracking the door open to this idea of prevention, you know, this idea of prevention over cure. And inevitably, it was using our most powerful tool, language, that if you can find something in its early stages in any capacity at all, it's treatable. It's just, she was telling us that testicular cancer is 100% curable if caught early. His age at 18, you know, it metastasized quick, because when you're young, your hormones go crazy anyway. It was, as Andy said, a devastating story. However,
what is a defining moment? We decided to create a social movement in his memory, because what we realized is the power that we have now and we did back then is social media and driving awareness and using creativity. So we came up with quite a bold idea, and we wanted to create the Live Aid of our generation. And we called it Feeling Nuts. And we asked the world, are you feeling nuts? And within 3 months of launching the movement, 1 billion people got behind it.
Stop.
Yeah.
A billion.
Over a billion. I'd say it was a very clever way in the way that we were kind of wanting to connect to a generation that was dismissing something so curable.
We basically went out to subcultures all around the world, artists, graffiti artists,
poets,
singers, and then our network of well-known people. And it just got a momentum, and it had a tipping point. The tipping point actually came, I think we had a lot of stars that did it. I mean, I remember like One Direction did it. When I say did it, they grabbed their crotch online and said, I'm feeling nuts.
Mm-hmm. Cara Delevingne remarkably did it.
Yeah. Well, we did a little sketch with her, where she couldn't understand why she was raising awareness when she didn't have a crotch. But the idea was that, you know, whilst women are down there, they should give their fella a check. That was a tug and a check.
Yeah. Yes, that could have been the campaign.
Yeah. I don't want to beat that one out. And then we ended up doing a show on Channel 4 with James Corden and Jack Whitehall called the Feeling Nuts Comedy Night, which is where we announced that 1 billion people that got behind the movement. We brought back, the whole idea was kind of comic relief, but it's comedy and it's about balls. So we actually brought back really famous pairings. So Men Behaving Badly came back to the screen first time in 15 years, I think it was.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Can I ask, did you remember the moment you had the idea?
Mm-hmm. I think the moment we had the idea was in the living room of Wendy and Jeremy's partner when they told us the story.
Absolutely. I remember clearly.
And we realized immediately that we really understood social media. We knew how to create movements.
Why? What were you doing at that point that made you feel that you could take this up?
Well, there was a distinction. You're talking about an archaic industry in the charitable area, which was it was governments, it was old hacks, it was a suited generation that all they understood is about money to kind of find the cure. Mm-hmm. This was different. There was a cure. And we understood at that time how people were connected, because it was a time when Vine was popping, and we understood that there was this kind of short period of time where people had an opportunity to entertain and stimulate their audience. We were part of the generation as much as we're spectators to it, but there were no other industries understanding how you can harness something with a powerful message to kind of empower a generation to get behind something that was meaningful, because everyone wanted attention, we felt, and we just knew that if you put a message that could really positively affect their audience or almost have a disciple effect, then I felt that we were doing something very different to how other people were utilizing that space of social media.
Yeah, I think we also became quite obsessed by two different formats as well. One was said Live Aid for the digital age, but we became quite obsessed with Bob Geldof and how he had this relentless pursuit to sort of raise money and drive awareness, but use the power of culture and celebrity and music to shift change and drive awareness around something he really cared about. And you know, we've always loved the entertainment industry. We've always loved music. We've always liked building brands, building movements, but also something that can actually create a change and can change someone's life. So it was quite amazing. I remember during the Channel 4 show, which was kind of the climax of this crazy 4 months, we were getting inundated with people sending us messages. I remember one message actually came just after the show from a guy who was a singer who was supposed to go on tour with Sam Smith. And he said, I watched your show on Channel 4 and I found during the show a lump on my testicle. And he went and got checked it out and it was testicular cancer, and his life's completely saved because of that.
Wow.
Mm.
Incredible. I mean, it's so amazing.
It was. And also, as Andy said, we broke down the internet into subcultures and we worked out how people were talking to their community. So we would literally, the tool was, we'd hand them the hashtag Feeling Nuts, and all we would say to them is, utilize your creativity however you do to, you know, to disseminate this to the audience. And then it's almost we just loosen the reins and just allow them to run
the
wild
thing
and message
was that we were trying to be the antithesis of charities. Like, we hated the idea of walking down the street and people like chugging like buckets in front of us. It was very intense. It wasn't very welcoming. And we felt like, because we went talking in the subject of like, when you've got cancer, it's about staying in front. So we had this sort of positive side of cancer. So, which is about being in check, you know, with your body, being the CEO of your body. So we were able to like, lead with comedy and make things entertaining. And we always saw like, it's that icing on the top of the cake, that wants you to make a bite of the cake and then you reveal the sort of layers. But yeah, I mean, I remember when, because there was a lot of noise that was being created around it. And I remember a lot of people, I was seeing, say before, like One Direction, Cara Delevingne, lots of amazing people have done it. And it got to the point where, like, when people were doing it, it wasn't like blowing up, and I just didn't understand. And I remember someone came into our meeting room at some point during the campaign and said, oh, Hugh Jackman's done it. And I was like, oh, okay, cool. Because like, you'd seen like a bunch of people do it already, and he was like,
no one's
cool.
Moving a needle.
No one's moving a needle. So I was just like, another one's up. And I remember I was on my way to go to Shoreditch House gym, and it made it into Mashable. And at that time, if you got into Mashable, it was like, you've got something that's trending. It was like a really big deal.
Right.
And I remember like, then I was like working out, and then it was in TMZ. And I was like, well, I'm messaging Si going like, it's in fucking TMZ. Like, that's amazing. We used to live in LA.
So we used to
watch TMZ. It was our favorite show.
Yeah.
And by the time I was leaving the gym, it was on ABC News. It was on Fox News. It was on CBS News. Yeah. Yeah, it was literally everywhere.
You should see
something about Hugh Jackman. I don't know what it is.
It's something about America. I think UK is very archaic in the way that they wait for the wave and then they somehow just maybe miss the wave. But America saw it and they lit up.
We approached BBC News and said, we can't talk about balls on BBC News.
Really?
We even had Anton Deck as a pair of testicles, animated testicles, talking to the world about the importance of keeping in check and talking about our campaign.
That video is still online, actually.
Incredible. Well,
so that was one defining moment, right?
Yeah. What an amazing, like, it's so inspirational. I love it. I am in awe of you guys. I think it's amazing what you did and saved so many lives. You should be very proud of yourselves.
Oh,
well, we are now.
What was then your second defining moment?
So this one's kind of linked up with Feeling Nuts, because originally we had gone to the States to go and build this out there. We've always felt an attachment to the States. You know, they think big, they think bold. You know, it's the land of optimism. You know, it's the American dream. You know, your dreams can come true. And we originally had this idea to go and do Feeling Nuts out there before we did it in the UK. We actually had the chance to close down Times Square to actually.
The mayor said yes to the Salter Brothers. the head of the MGM Strip Hotel in Las Vegas said yes to the Salter Brothers to shutting down 80% of the Strip and giving us hotels to have performances in the hotel rooms. I mean, it was It's bombastic.
I mean, we had the production company of the Super Bowl halftime show as well, who were on board to produce it.
Stop.
It was mad. So actually,
well, which is why you're
when
saying
when it actually happened, feeling like in the UK it was a second life. We had a first life, and this the defining moment number two is the reason it didn't happen in the States. We basically were living in the States on an ESTA visa. So for anyone who's been to America, that's essentially a tourist visa. So you can only go into the States for up to, it lasts 2 years, but you can only be in the States for 90 days tops. Mm-hmm. So on the 89th day of the 3 months, we'd always leave and we go back to the UK, stay for a week and then return. What we should have done is got a proper visa, but obviously being young and, you know.
Well, time was always an enemy. You know, if you're getting a visa, we just knew it would take a few months. So every time
and
we got
admin,
to...
admin, we hate admin.
Yeah. So we'd always script what we're going to say at customs when they're saying, all right, they'll say, why are you both here? Your brothers, I don't see, yeah, okay, why are you here? We'd say, what would we say? We're on holiday or something? I don't know. We'd just say something brief, just let us through kind
of
thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And what actually happened is coming back on the last one, Simon lost his passport. Which
that's
is another
got nothing
story.
To, oh, it has everything
it is
to do
relevant,
it. Has
but we won't go
do
down
it.
That rabbit yeah. hole, but it is relevant because when you get an ESTA visa, it's linked to your passport. And when you get a new passport, you need a new passport number.
Right.
So what happened is when we, it must have been month, I don't know, like 20 of living in LA, we're going back via JFK to go and sign a deal with ABC, who were basically going to
commission.
Commission, yeah. But the deal was done. We were literally going to New York to sign the paperwork, which we regret now. Went through JFK. Go to customs, what you hear, holiday, stamp, another 3 months, great, boom. Then they ask, Simon, what are you doing here?
Well, you always get this part slightly wrong.
Oh, yeah?
I say always. there were about six TSA officers waiting in the wings for me, and I could see them in the distance.
Stop.
Yeah, because, you know, they're anticipating a drug lord's coming through, or they think it's because someone is trying to circumvent the system in a very shady kind of way. So when I got there, when we were flying through the sky, my ESTA visa got declined. So they were waiting for me right. as the plane was about, as soon as it landed. Mm.
There was this moment where, so he got rejected. Or didn't get rejected, they said, you need to go to secondary for like more questioning. And then I was fine though. So I said, all right, I'll carry on and I'll see you.
No way.
Because we had an apartment, I'll see you in the apartment. He was like,
no.
I'm your brother, you're staying with
you're
me.
You're kidding. Yeah. You didn't let him go.
No. This
you
was,
didn't let me
this
go.
Was no,
I
spe- this was
I'd
no
be
individual pursuit.
Right now.
No. I wasn't going on my own. We come as a package deal, you see. If I can just say a few things here, is that when we went into secondary, and you've got to understand, it's like strip lighting, it's horrible. It's almost like before you're going to be arrested to be put in a cell. It's not a nice place to be in secondary if anyone's been in secondary. And there was this mother hen walking around who kind of
didn't believe obviously us. Revealed everything then, you know, we're out here doing this show about sign ABC.
And she kept saying, no, you're in drugs, you're in something, we're going to get to the bottom of this, you're not going anywhere, you're going to go down.
And these
six officers are there, so they take me to one side, they ask me to stand up, and they start searching me. At this point, I don't get excited. Because they went everywhere. Every esophagus they could find. So, and then they asked me to put my hands up. They put a belt around me and a ball ring, and then they had chains.
They cuffed both wrists.
Yeah.
And they basically connected it. So it basically shackled us.
Yeah.
And we were like, and these guys have got like, they're armed. And we're like, is it totally necessary to handcuff us? Like,
I think there were some officers who were probably brought up in a school as bullies because the way they dealt with us wasn't with, innocent until proven guilty, yeah. I guess.
I mean,
just not guilty.
They stripped us of our soul. You know, we felt horrible. Then they literally led us to the tarmac.
You've been brought into this thanks to your brother, right?
Yeah.
So you're now shackled and you have Simon to thank.
Yeah.
Just to clarify.
Were you actually ever pissed off with me at all?
Yes.
Okay. So, but
have you seen the weather outside?
So actually, interesting enough, Anne is going a bit quicker because... They shackled my brother too. They surrounded us. Mm. They took us away because they're closing this situation down. They took us onto this tarmac Andy's talking about. And there's a van, a meat van, you know, the big kind of police vans.
Basically transport prisoners around it.
And right. Then they had two bikes in front, motorbikes. And I was nervous at this point because, well, where are they taking us? Really?
Yeah.
So they put us in the back of the van. They threw chains. They would say they're chained to these steel kind of
just
chairs.
Just in case we were going to escape, right? Do you know what I mean?
I foolishly asked for air conditioning, which is a stupid idea. They obviously didn't have air conditioning in the back.
Yeah.
So they took us across the tarmac. We're just seeing we're leaving the airport. And then they took us to...
It was basically a 24-hour holding area.
But had cells in there and everything. Yeah. They had really odd people in there.
Customs of another terminal, and everyone's looking at the two guys coming through a handcuffs.
Yeah, public display.
Yeah.
Fucking hell.
We do get to the point of why this is a defining moment, I'm sure. But we were there for another 8 hours of being interrogated. We couldn't, at this point, I'm saying to Andy, we've got our meeting with the commissioners of ABC. So Andy would say to one of the officers, I need the toilet. You're still handcuffed. They didn't know that Andy had his phone on him, I believe, at that point. So
I went literally for a number two to go and literally catch. Oh, you didn't make the flight. So sorry. Gonna have to reschedule. Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah.
So
basically, within 24 hours of taking a flight to JFK, we were back home.
they released us. You.
Well, they put us on the. They took us back. Let me say this part.
Yeah.
They took us to the terminal. These are your tickets. You're going back, never to return ever again in this lifetime. So they took us onto to this open area, the terminal, where everyone saw us, surrounded by these guards in handcuffs. No one wanted to sit next to us. They escorted us onto the plane with the handcuffs. They gave the passports to the air host, the air hostess. No one wanted to sit next to me. There was a lot of space next to me. You know, we could have been anyone. We were in handcuffs. It was a horrible situation to have that situation, not just us but for others. So I sympathize with others, but the reality was we just tried to kind of challenge a whole area so we didn't have to get a visa. So we came back, our mother, Jewish mother, going crazy. What happened after that? I think
crushed.
We were crushed, crushed. We got
mentally. I mean, everything been taken from us. Everything we dreamt of, we manifested.
We were moving towards our dreams. We from a very young age, we've been very ambitious. Really persistent. That's something everyone's always said. We're very persistent. We don't give up. And we've always worked ourselves outside the system. You know, neither of us really had a job ever. So we've not moved our way structurally to the top. We've always kind of, you know, come up with our own ideas, you know, lived an entrepreneurial lifestyle. And, you know, every day our dream gets closer and closer. So the fact that these, establishments got in our way and there's nothing you can do about it. It's not like I can give someone a call. But shout out to Joel Katz. We've collected some amazing mentors in our life who have kind of, I think we've discussed this before, been older brother, fatherly figures that have kind of really believed in us, and they're hugely successful, and they've kind of like connected us, showed us the way, really been there in terrible moments and moments of celebration as well. We've got this lawyer, he's probably been our lawyer for like over 10 years. He's probably the most powerful man in the music industry. I mean, he's Michael Jackson's lawyer. He's a lawyer for the Grammys.
For every chairman of the label.
Yeah, like if someone buys a record label, they call him up. Like Len Blavatnik buying Warner Music Group, you know. He's absolutely incredible, extremely, extremely powerful.
Very caring for us as well.
Yeah, so by the way, our mum was instructed to call him whilst we were in... locked up in the airport.
We had one call.
She googled Joel Katz and called a divorce lawyer in Maryland. It was the wrong one. He was like, I don't know who these guys are.
You're kidding.
Yeah. Could have saved the day.
Yeah.
But he basically really helped us out. I mean, on the first on the first go, we got given these O-1 visas, but unfortunately the episode in JFK, when we got to the MC to collect them, they literally said, what happened at JFK? And they revoked the visas. So we actually had to start all over again. Hence it then happened, rather than ABC, it happened on Channel 4. But to be honest, it probably happened way better than it ever would have done because we got to give it another go. But the fact we didn't give up was quite amazing.
Yeah.
That was an overall kind of moment, if there's a moment. I mean, it was the idea that it's to the average person on the sideline or 30,000 feet up looking over our life, it would have been easy to have tapped out or just have given up. If anything, paradoxically, it kind of built us more grit and belief, because it really challenged our belief. So that part was an amazing moment. I know why you're saying Joel, because he was able to get a senator, I believe, write a...
He represents senators, all sorts of people. We got a 10-year visa out of
Let it, these so. Boys back. So it was almost like a life ban that what we were doing. But we got on a massive apology from the US immigration.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Head of the...
Sorry.
The direct...
I didn't actually mention that, but that's pretty cool. I remember we were in Starbucks in Ebor Street in Mayfair, and we got invited to the Grammys.
Ebor Street's in East London.
No, it's not. It's in Mayfair.
Oh, really?
Oh, you're right, actually. Yeah. Sorry, somewhere in Mayfair in a Starbucks.
Yeah.
And we got invited to the Grammys. It was to like the pre-Grammys, the Clive Davis party, like the most amazing access to this award show you can imagine. And we can't go because of this whole situation. And all we want to do is attend an event. So we Googled, like, who's the most powerful man in immigration? And it turned out his name's Alejandro or something. Reported directly into Obama.
Yeah.
God rest Obama's soul. we guessed his email address. And we wrote to him and we said, you know, this is what happened in JFK. We were overdoing this show. Here's the trailer for the show. And I remember we, like, closed the laptop, like, got on a train. And 40 minutes later, our phones went off. And we sort of picked up, it was Alejandro, and we're like, it must be like automated reply or something. And he emailed us and apologized.
Full apology.
Amazing.
Full apology. And he basically, cut long story short, because time may become the enemy, he basically charged us with a team, gave us a team to make sure we got the right visa, the right approach. And then
within 24 hours, we had a visa.
But there's a letter. Yeah. So I still go through secondary. I don't know why I go through secondary. Yeah. You don't. So I go through secondary. I go through secondary still.
Wait for him now as well. Yeah,
not after that.
If and when we get to, and I believe, because every time the TSA officer, whoever they are, they always say, they sit me down, like disregard me as a human being for a minute or two, come back and they say, I'm sorry, sir. Enjoy America, whatever the words are. There is a letter that goes with that's on file. And I think it's from this senator and about this debacle that we kind of experienced. So if
debacle.
It's worth, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sorry. I've got many, many more words I can draw. I don't know why I know this. I think some dyslexic. I just want to prove to people my language is still okay in some capacity. So there is a letter that exists, and certainly my file, my guy on the right doesn't go through secondary. He's all good. But a defining moment, merely because you can be up against some of the worst kind of challenges, not to compare, but this was a really shitty challenge. And you're still fully armed on the front lines, smelling the coffee and just getting and just battling through it, because otherwise we just sit down and just kind of wallow in the what ifs. And I said this quote to you the other day, and I do, it's still like imprinted within me, which is, if not me, then who? If not now, then when? So that's a consistent mantra that we tend to use that kind of allows us to kind of battle through any challenges, because there is no fairy tale story to what we do in any capacity at all. And I think that to anyone else.
Wow, what a moment. Yeah. I feel like I've honestly just watched a TV show.
Really? Well, we are. Isn't this your show right now? We've got 16 cameras. We've got heavy production. What's your budget?
Unreal. Yeah. And I'm sure everyone will be... both have just enjoyed your story. It's so entertaining, but also really inspiring. You know, that's what the podcast is about. It's understanding that even in these moments where everything seems to be going wrong, it always is truly going right.
So,
thank you.
It's a pleasure.
Push Your Peak is a brand new podcast brought to you by WattBike. Join me, Louise Minchin, and some of the world's most incredible sports people to learn what it takes mentally and physically to push yourself beyond your limits. Whether you're an elite or everyday athlete, it can be hard to continually progress. How do you push yourself out of your comfort zone? Where do you go to find that inner drive? Tune in to hear these inspiring stories and take away the belief that you can achieve your own goals no matter how big or small. You can find us wherever you got this podcast. Just search Push Your Peak.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What is then your third defining moment?
We agreed on what it was.
Okay.
Probably the biggest one.
Though. It is. It's the defining of the ultimate burnout, which I believe we all kind of go in some capacity, or some people I know have gone through it, which was a great kind of challenge on our journey. But do you wanna open this one up?
Yeah.
Crack it open, Andy.
Where are we now?
With 2022.
So yeah, it must have been 2016 then. Yeah, so following Feeling Nuts, following getting arrested at JFK, we went on to build a really successful business. You kind of sort of felt like we were living our dreams finally. But in that process, we did something really silly and really stupid. And that was, we never really took care of ourselves. I think we sacrificed sleep. I think we had a very unhealthy diet. You know, we rarely, you know, went to the gym, even though that was very much part of growing up. You know, we were both athletes growing up. What do you say? You took a little deep breath there.
You go ahead, Andy. You go ahead.
Sorry, go on.
No, I was just thinking, because I just realized there was a time when I would walk down Oxford Street with my hat down, my hood up, only on the basis I felt fucking awful physically. I just didn't like the way I looked because I didn't take care of myself. Which I wanted to be invisible on that street. It's a weird thing. And sometimes I'd wake up and go for a run and I'd break down and cry. Mm. I've never shared that before. Mm. What is the power that you have, Roxy? It's amazing.
I think we used to actually, it's really funny, we used to say to each other, I've got that sinking feeling thing again, which seemed to be something that kept happening on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And what we've now kind of learned, you know, I don't think it was, that it wasn't really spoken about that then, but it was basically anxiety and anxiousness, and which kind of didn't make sense because we've been working so hard to have things like financial freedom and to have achievement and to be recognized and you know, to be an entrepreneur. Finally you can claim I'm an entrepreneur, not trying to be one. Yeah, you know, I really, you know, most mornings during that year couldn't even get out of bed, and I couldn't find the drive. You know, we were talking earlier about like Mondays, you know, like now it's different. I'll kind of explain why in a minute, but you know, I get out of bed now and I feel like I've got a purpose. You know, like not only are we building something, we're actually helping people, and we're seeing the effects of that every day. But it got really bad. Like, you know, I don't think it was depression, I mean, who knows. But it got to the point where I sort of said to my brother, I just really don't know what to do. Like, I'm not enjoying life anymore. It was really sad. when he does that.
Well, because I know categorically, he'll just ride the wave, keep talking.
By the way, I feel like you did this to Andy on stage at my workshop. Yes, and yeah, now it's Andy's turn.
Yeah.
It's funny.
Do you know what? Neither mic.
Interesting. When we did the edit for that video, it's all Andy's sound bites. Like everything when it's I was kind of, oh, let I'm me just tell you though. But I was, I say the best things. No, but you know, I took the platform to kind of be candid about the way that I felt about you and about my purpose, right?
Oh, that was nice, yeah.
It was amazing. I'm only sure.
Oh, no. But when you see the final edit, you'll see it's, I play the warm-up act. I don't get involved really at all.
Mm. But yeah, it was Si's idea. He said, let's just go to the doctors.
Yeah.
Which was which wasn't the best of ideas, because when you're like in salvation and there's no kind of trusted source, your trusted source being the GP has a limited bandwidth of knowledge, and then anything, he's like the farm agent. All he's doing is pushing pills on us. And all those pills, when you read the side effects, is it really worth popping one of those? Or is that just going to add more fuel to the fire? So we had to look at alternative ways. There's no way I wanted my brother being the older brother. And I didn't really own up to Andy about, I was feeling the same thing, maybe worse. And I think that's maybe an older brother syndrome, which we spoke about on stage with you that day. I hated the idea that I was failing my brother, which amplified the feelings I was having, to kind of go to sleep and not sleep, to kind of wake up full of angst and cortisol levels rocketing off like a fireworks display, not having any control. Like Andy's used the word about being the CEO of our own body. We weren't, we completely disregarded it. So yeah, looking at alternative ways was a very important part, because we didn't know where this was going to head. And we weren't educated. I don't think we were really educated at school, you know. It's a very archaic kind of system in schools at the moment.
Yeah, we're not taught about the mind.
You're not. And and we had to be in a situation.
I mean, the thing is like our minds are like our most precious resource. And we rely and depend on them to, you know, to function well, to focus, but also to be happy and to be content. Yeah, we just literally disregard them. We don't look after them. We take more care of our clothes and our homes and our cars. And you know, one of the things I realized that I didn't know what it was like to be present. I was always leapfrogging into the future, like predetermining the future, you know, worrying about things. And I kind of felt like I wasn't like that when I was a kid, you know. And you know, someone might say, you know, that's because when you're a kid, you know, you're more naive, you haven't got experience. Fearless, but actually, I felt like when I was younger, that's where, you know, like talking about getting arrested in JFK, that was completely led by naivety. Now I'd be like all over it, got to get the visa, got to get this. But actually, would we have got that far if we were overthinking stuff and being anxious all the time? And yeah, and that's kind of where we sort of landed. And we started to research into, like, saying, you know, alternative medicine, you know,
TCM or traditional Chinese medicine. We'd look at different ancestral kind of.
It's a new word, isn't it?
I've not heard that.
So it was like some new drug.
Yeah, I was like, what is this?
We could talk about that too.
You know, we did lots of different things, but it was one moment that sort of changed our life, and now it's become our life. And we got invited to an apartment in West London. There was a lady in town from China, just for a week from her village. And she decided she wanted to share a little bit about the miracles of mushrooms. And we went along to this tea ceremony, because at that point we would have done anything to not feel like the way we did. We were kind of hoping they were magic mushrooms.
Which is what most people think of when they think of taking
kind
mushrooms.
Of, unfortunately, yeah.
Unfortunately?
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah. Yeah.
I think there's a fear. Well, it's decorated in fear, I believe. Yeah, mushrooms.
There's actually, there's something called mycophobia, which is the irrational fear of mushrooms. And which is something we learned that night. And what was quite amazing about this lady, she didn't just go like, this mushroom does this, this mushroom does that. She actually went into the background of mushrooms. And, you know, we're very knowledgeable about now, of course, with Dirty. But I didn't realise that fungi are its entire kingdom, like the planet kingdom, like the human kingdom. I didn't realize there was millions of species of fungi. I didn't realize they were the first species to come from the ocean to the dry land. They created something called a fungi network. It's a mycelium network. Anyone seen Fantastic Fungi will know all about it. And actually our entire planet, including us, including trees, plants, completely thrive on this mycelium network. So they get the nutrients, their minerals, What? He does that thing.
Oh, no, I say, fungi, sorry, man. I say, and if you took fungi out of the equation, the ecology, everything ceases to exist, including us. Yeah.
Mm. They survived six...
Five extinctions.
Five extinctions. They will survive another one when we're gone. They'll be here after us.
And we will be the cause and the victim. That's another kind of case to talk about.
30% of pharmaceuticals derive from fungi. They live in, they breathe just like us. They breathe in oxygen. They breathe out carbon dioxide. We actually have, we share 54% of our DNA with mushrooms. Mm-hmm. So you're actually half a mushroom.
A desirable one.
Yeah.
And also, it's the only.
An orange mushroom?
There is.
Is there?
The chicken. What's it called?
Fellash?
No. Don't. We talk about the color of it.
Yeah.
But there is also. It's the only non-mammal species that actually secretes vitamin D. So everything that we, in theory, most of us are deficient in, is all within the fruiting body of the mushroom. Mm. And that night is what we learned. She cracked the door open to this, this mystery world.
May I say, so these functional, also medicinal mushrooms are antiviral, they're antibacterial, they're anti-inflammatory. You know, one of the mushrooms has more antioxidants in it, in one teaspoon than 600 blueberries. They're amazing for the skin. They help us sleep. They help us think better. They can regrow and regenerate brain cells. They're a source of natural energy. And it all comes from this amazing... They're the fruiting body of this mycelium network. Mm.
So they are magic mushrooms, just not in the magic that...
You're right. That's exactly it. They're magical in a very different kind of way that other people perceive the magic. Mm. But
when you went to this lady's house, so what was it? How were you introduced?
So... it was a friend of ours introduced us to this concept, and who knew there was tea ceremonies going on in West London. But then when you think West London, maybe that makes sense. But we entered this room and the lights were dim and she had Palo Santo.
Mm.
You know, so the first thing for your listeners, it's a tree in South America that when you burn the bark of it, it gives off this sweet smell that hasn't been tampered with, but it's also known as the holy wood.
Mm.
And it almost puts you in this state, this parasympathetic state. It's very calm kind of state. So, and, you know, cushions on the floor, very ceremonial, very kind of like a salon, very cool. And it's the way she presented it. It was almost a sacrament. You know, here's the mushroom, see it, be one with it. Like, it was, because there is a divine union we share with, and Andy was like telling you. And it's the moment you kind of sit with it, and the way we lifted the bowl was like drawing from the river. So everything was so symbiosis with nature. Mm. And there is a harmony of nature we do share. And I think for that moment to drink something that was so purely healing and nice, how are mushrooms nice? You've tasted our mushrooms. Mm. And to drink something that's so bioavailable as well, that it gets, meaning it gets into the circulatory system, it starts to heal the body. So as much as it's healing the future of our planet, these mushrooms are healing our body. It's allowing us to improve the betterment of our well-being, or just improve or optimize. Mm. My thing was always in that moment, how could something so healing be so dismissed for so many years?
Mm.
The defining moment really became that these were healing us. Mm. And
quite quickly.
Quite incredibly quickly. So if they could heal us, how many more people could be healed by these mushrooms?
Mm. So how quickly?
I said in a couple of weeks. I don't know. What happened?
Did you start drinking the tea every day?
Yeah, every day.
That night we drank. So sleep was one of my biggest issues. Mm. And it hadn't been before.
It's not now.
No.
I've fallen asleep three times today since you've been speaking.
That's terrible to say that to Roxy. I'm so sorry.
No, I'm joking. So reishi increases your non-REM, your deep sleep. Mm. And that night we drank, one of the mushrooms drank was reishi, which is one of Dirty's mushrooms. And I haven't slept that well in like over a year. That was one of the biggest sort of immediate impacts is how quickly it worked. Energy was something I suffered, and we were drinking a mushroom called cordyceps.
Oh my God, I've got to say, I've been having my cordyceps mushrooms, having a teaspoon of it in my coffee every morning.
Amazing.
And I am sleeping an hour less at night, so seven hours instead of eight.
Oh, wow.
And I'm not having a second coffee.
Wow. Oh, wow.
So I am like hooked. It's so good.
That's it really amazing. Is.
Yeah, I'm loving it. And it's actually now become immediately a habit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm so happy to hear that.
Oh, I'm loving it.
I'm so happy because, you know, one of the things is we never want to force habit. We just want people to elevate their morning, your morning coffee.
Mm. And it's so easy. You just add it to something I'm already taking.
Exactly.
Yeah. And actually, interesting, well, cordyceps has a compound called cordyceps inside it. So when you do drink it, it increases the amount of oxygen into your muscles, into your lungs. Mm. For those who have any issues, I can't say the word. Breathing issues, respiratory issues, it helps clear the esophagus. It's amazing for those who have asthma and for those who want to endure longer on any physical training. It's amazing. A friend of ours who has long COVID, and one of the things is he's consistently fatigued since he's been drinking cordyceps. It's kind of had an impact now on his energy. He's in the gym the same time I'm in the gym. It's, you know, our tipping point or our moment was these are having such an unbelievable and the thing is the effect it had on us, we had a responsibility, we had a purpose. For the first time we felt we had a purpose that was beyond. It was never supposed to be a business. This was about us bringing friends over on a Friday night to ours and seeing if they are reaping the same benefits as us. And then when you steep into the stories, these ancestral stories that go back 2000 years ago, when great emperors were drinking these mushrooms in order to kind of improve their longevity, the mushroom Andy spoke about, reishi, which is, I can't think of the Latin term, but if you translate it to English, it's the miraculous mushroom. It's the mushroom of immortality. It's the mushroom of longevity. It really has. So everything they were drinking back then, we've now got studies and research that's basically allowing us to rediscover why they were drinking it and why they found it as these sacred offerings from the gods. So the point for us really was, the moment really was, it was helping us. And for me, it was like a godsend because all I wanted to do is my brother to be better because I felt like I was failing him. So it was a moment, and that moment is consistently gone. And it's now building, I believe, a movement in the world of mushrooms. And, you know, now, unfortunately, does it take a tragedy for us to shake the consciousness to realize that there are things out there that can heal us?
I think our biggest challenge is, and I guess it's kind of happened in the kind of mindful movement. I mean, the idea of meditating a few years ago, I guess a lot of my friends probably laugh at me at the idea of it. And now everyone's got some kind of app that's helping them every day to do it. And it's almost true. Like these ancient cultures who have access to the world of nature, and they've been able to create these rituals daily for thousands of years. And, you know, we've got a certain way living, you know, here in the West. And, you know, what we've always been quite good at is taking something that's quite esoteric and strange and a bit weird or embarrassing or just not cool. Pretty much like what you've done with Manifest, actually. It's really similar.
Everyone I know talks about it. And I showed you
Manifest cool.
Just as a side just a side note, like a lot of my guy friends, they all know about it. I mean, I sent you some of the videos. It's inspiring. It really is inspiring. Is, just as a side note.
Thank you. Well, I think, you know, we are very aligned, and I think that's why we've been doing so much together, because we are both, you know, all three of us trying to make self-development and healing and inner healing also cool and commercial. And I think, you know, you guys have that same thing as me, I suppose. You're both very kind of entrepreneurial. You do have commercial mindsets. You do love networking, speaking to people, meeting new people, growth. And at the same time, you have a sole purpose of healing and helping, and joining those together, I think, makes something magical.
Yeah, I agree. I think what you've done remarkably is normalize something. So like you're saying, historical, like it's interestingly enough, when we went to America, there's a bookshop called Barnes & Noble. I don't think it's open anymore. I'm not too sure. But you went to the top floor. The whole floor was self-help. Yeah, in the UK, in Waterstones, it was the smallest corner.
True.
Which is why I can't wait for you to fly over the pond, a very small pond, and become ubiquitous, such a manifest queen.
So quickly, for people who want to know about Dirty, what are your products? What have you got, and how can people incorporate them into their daily lives?
Well, we can go from sunrise to sunset, can't we?
Should
we
do the really simple version of it?
Does that mean you're going to speak and I'm not?
No!
No, it's cool. I saw you look.
You can't be simple.
No, it's fine. Someone just messaged me on Slack anyway. We'll get back to you. go on. You go, Andy.
What do you want each?
We'll do one each.
That's fair, isn't it?
Let me do Lion's Mane. Let me do Lion's Mane.
Okay,
you do Chagga.
We'll start with Chagga.
Yeah, go for Chagga.
We'll do it by the time of day that we drink it.
Okay.
And naturally, you'll see the color palette is based on sunrise to sunset.
Yeah. Oh, very cool. Yeah. Also, could you explain to people how you can take this for people that don't drink coffee, for example?
Sure.
How exactly are you taking it?
Sure. Okay, yeah, cool. So we basically have two separate lines. One line is pure 100% mushroom extract powder.
Organic.
That's organic. And we'll go through each of the mushrooms. That sort of refer to those more as the teas, the traditional way of consuming the mushroom, where you literally would add a teaspoon to hot water, you stir it and you drink. Like coffee, it comes straight, so people can customize it. You know, they can add honey or an oat milk if that's what they like, or a sweet natural sweetener, or like what you do, you know, you can add it to your coffee, you can add it to a smoothie. You basically make it work for you and you find out what works for you. But the important thing, as long as that mushroom is going into your body, it's going to do all the healing and it's going to help you to function better and heal you. On the other side, we've got more of what I like to refer as more of a mainstream product, which we've created to really normalize the situation. And I think this is where the brand's going to get more of the fame, because what we've done is they're called super blends. And what we've done is we've taken drinks that people are already drinking, like coffee, cacao. You know, we look at something like Starbucks, right? This is where we get a bit we get a bit much.
But I look at Andy's talking about the enemy.
Yeah. What's his name? Howard. Does he listen to your podcast?
I very much doubt it.
Watch out, Howard. I look at something like Starbucks, and because when we had all these issues, you know, what was my lifestyle like? I take this coffee and it just to literally wake me up and just to feel really alert. And you get this like spike of energy and get this crash, but you also get this like, you get acid refluxes. You know, sometimes I have digestive issues. Like we were drinking things, but with compromise. So what we've kind of done is we've looked, okay, most of the country, like a lot of people are trying to come off coffee or at least reduce caffeine intake. But a lot of people drink coffee and they want to drink coffee and they enjoy it. So our whole thing is like, let's take a really high quality, very tasty coffee and then blend it with functional ingredients. So something that's going to improve your immunity, something that's going to increase your focus, give you clarity. It's going to improve your skin. And it's going to make you feel calm. It's going to be a calmer energy and not something that's going to last an hour or 2 hours and then you need another cup of coffee. But actually, because they're adaptogens, mushrooms are adaptogens, and what that basically means is you get this slow release of energy, so it'll last more like 5-6 hours. You won't need that extra coffee and you won't get that crash. So we feel like we're inventing something new. We're basically taking normal drinks and we're making them super drinks. And we've done that with a coffee and we've done that with a cacao.
And also the cacao, you know, people...
Oh, it's delicious. It's like a hot chocolate.
Yeah, exactly. And it doesn't spike your sugar levels.
No, I love it.
16 calories, zero sugar. It's got vanilla, cinnamon, lacuma, coconut milk powder in it. So we've made it taste really good. And then it's got the ratio that you were chatting about. Immortality.
The mushroom immortality.
Improves sleep, reduces stress, soothes anxiety.
It's amazing.
I need more ratio.
Okay. It'll give you a life supply, don't worry.
Thank you.
But then to go through each one, which, and the most important thing just to stress is the reason we did each one is because, you know, our purpose is to help educate people. And we could just dish out Lion's Mane here and Jagger there, but separately, so people really understand what they're steeping into. Maybe Andy, you fire away with the morning, we'll go through the Jagger.
So I drink Jagger first thing in the morning. I don't want to say before I meditate, because then it's going to sound all like kind of...
And is single, so try it.
Want it not to feel like it's weird drinking teas and stuff. But you can drink it first thing in the morning. The thing I like about it, it really grounds you. Makes you feel really present, which is my favorite state of mind. It gives you... It's a source of natural energy. It actually is incredible for your skin. You know, one of the issues that we sort of had when we were going through that unhealthy year in 2016 was like a really... My skin really suffered.
So dry.
Right?
Sorry.
Chaga was the one thing that really, really improved. It really hydrates your skin.
We get a lot of people who respond who have rosacea and psoriasis and so forth.
Really?
It's cured it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%.
Wow. And
it's really powerful.
It's incredible. It really is.
It actually can protect you from harmful sun rays as well.
Yeah. Because it's got a high concentration of melanin.
Not saying don't wear sun cream, but, you know, it does. It helps.
Wow.
And then it's just... it supports and strengthens your immune system. So, you know, if you're you know, you just don't want to get a cold, or you feel like you've got something coming on, you just drink that, and it's very powerful. Each serving is 2,000 milligrams, so it's more than anything else you'll see out there on the market. Mm-hmm. We've really gone for potency and strength.
Yeah.
As I start my mornings at 4:30, up before the world wakes, win that first battle.
Is it the only time you guys are apart?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
He rolls out the top bunk.
I just think, you know, certainly a calm mind is a product of mine, many will say, but, you know, it's so quiet in the morning. And so the reason I say that is lion's mane is my weapon of choice in the morning, meaning that it's a brain tonic, lion's mane, or perceived as a nootropic, not to get too scientific. But by drinking lion's mane, it activates something called neurogrowth factor, which is the growth of new brain cells in your hippocampus, the thinking part of the mind, which is absolutely tremendous. And by doing so, it increases focus, memory, and concentration. Thousands of years ago, Shaolin monks would actually consume lion's mane before they went into a deep meditative state, and they would actually achieve qi. They would talk about how lion's mane would have helped them. So taking ancestral kind of references, having it in the morning, I would use it for meditation. It also takes away brain fog. It gives you a sense of clarity. Mm. Everything I'm actually sharing is all scientifically proven. There's T-Pub, and is it, what's it called? The NCBI, which is basically
another drug on the street.
NCBI is basically a platform for where a lot of the clinical research is kind of promoted and so forth. But there you go, you've lost all your listeners by me saying random stuff.
Yeah. No, this is fab. I'm also like, I'm going to take this to write book two.
Okay. So having that's amazing. Again, we should say there's no caffeine, no sedatives in any of these. So having that in the morning is amazing. I'll sometimes add it to a coffee or use our dirty mushroom coffee. But I think the most important thing is, if you could, even in the sense of shifting the mind to positive affirmations, the fact that you can drink something and it's healing, I think it's incredibly important in the morning. Mm. So important. So yeah, that's lion's mane.
Okay, could you, sorry, just quickly, if someone's like, oh my God, like me, I want it all.
Yeah.
Fuck, I need everything.
Yeah.
But there's only so much liquid I can drink. Could I mix it?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah. Would it taste
great question.
Worse, or is it fine?
No, it's still the compounds and nutrients are still bioavailable, still operates. So you can, we call it the dirty elixir. You know, put them all together. Yeah. You're going to say something, or I can carry on. No, so but the things, if you have more than 10 mushrooms in there, like different, then you're going to lose its kind of essence. But
no,
yeah,
but like two or three.
Yeah, three, yeah, absolutely. Four. I mean, in our dirty mushroom coffee.
Fuck it, all of them. Yeah.
In our dirty mushroom coffee, we use three. We use chaga, lion's mane, and cordyceps. And that's probably a nice way to talk about cordyceps, because that's the next energy mushroom that you would have.
We did cover it a little bit, so I won't go too much into it. But I'll talk about one area you didn't mention.
Yes.
Daytime, physical activity. So it basically increases lung capacity, helps get oxygen through the body to the muscle tissues, to the cells, to the blood. Like I say, I think you mentioned it gives you more energy through the day. So it's definitely, anyone wants a boost of energy, it's great. Mm. I have 5 weeks to train for a marathon. I hadn't run in a month.
Mm.
And on my first running session, I had cordyceps. First time I used it whilst running, tablespoon, ridiculous amounts, like 4.5 grams. I ran 15k and I hadn't run 15k in my life, and it's because I didn't feel like that tight chest is the reason I'd stop.
Yeah.
So it just really feel you genuinely, and everyone I asked, so I know it wasn't just me, your lungs really sort of open up. So if you're doing like a workout class, or you're going swimming or running, it's amazing, absolutely incredible. I love it. It's also really good in the bedroom department. So it increases libido. Yeah, so before you get laid, definitely have a cup of cordyceps tea.
again, scientifically proven.
Really?
Yeah. We're not just founders pushing a brush.
There was 1 week I was drinking a lot and I felt very horny.
Yeah. Basically, Annie would have banged anything with a pulse that week.
I did.
And it's a nice nutty taste, actually. It's got a nice caramelly.
Did you mention that lion's mane tastes amazing?
Lion's mane is my favorite one. It's got caramel kind of taste.
I think cordyceps tastes great.
Yeah, it's got a similar kind of palate, I think.
Yeah.
I'd say with cordyceps, like, if you don't love the taste, add a little bit of honey and it's amazing.
It really is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then the horizon sunset red of reishi is actually probably, I'd say, is my favorite on the basis of how quickly that it can perform on the body. Reishi is also known for a compound that actually, it's got nearly 300 compounds in a reishi. Mm. So one of the compounds actually calms your nervous system down. So an overactive mind, it just calms it down in the evening, because I think a lot of us who have a creative mindset are pushing the envelope in our respected industries. We are literally on how do you turn the mind off. Reishi is fabulous at that. So having that in the evening is scientifically proven how it increases your non-REM, your deep sleep. And it was remarkable for me. Both Annie and I suffered from sleep deprivation because we were always on. Reishi calmed us down, gave us amazing sleep. I would say it's a bitter experience, but again, you can add oat milk or soy milk. We do add it into our cacao, again, to kind of mask the taste, but it doesn't affect the efficacy. The other interesting thing about it, I recently read about, those who suffer from hay fever will love this, because reishi, one of the other compounds in it, it suppresses your histamine levels. So when you're around like pollen and grass, it arouses your histamine, so you get these different micro inflammations.
There's an active compound in it called polysaccharides, especially an immune modulator. So it actually balances out your immune system. So essentially, like hay fever or any kind of allergy, your immune system has like a hyperactive response. It just brings it down to a normal level. And then if you're getting like a virus or a cold or anything like that, it's underactive. So it just brings it up. So basically, I actually probably say out of anything out there, it's the best thing for your immune system. It's
reishi.
Because every time I've got something, I'll have reishi at night, I'll drink it, and it's literally stops in a track. So I might get a little bit of cold, but it will never get that bad. Like, I still function, I still got energy. And then within 24 to 48 hours, it's just completely gone.
Wow.
I was actually scored on this recently, because I think it's important to understand that the fact when your immune system is compromised, the first thing you do is go to Holland Barrett and buy something that stimulates it, like echinacea, which became a buzz term over COVID. But unfortunately, all that's doing is boosting and boosting your immune system. The great thing about these mushrooms, they're immunomodulators, like Andy was saying, all they want to do is keep your immune system at a cruise level. So if it's slightly aroused, it'll bring it down to that cruise level. If it's depleted, it'll just bring it up slightly. All the mushroom is doing is just trying to allow you to feel healed. Personally, over what happened with COVID, or if there's anything else going externally, like the common cold, it almost feels like wearing an S on your chest. You know, the reality is we've never really succumbed to different westernized pills or pharmaceutical kind of pills, because mushrooms seem to be the great healers. I'm not saying you shouldn't have a pill here and there, but mushrooms have become the beacon of us, of our lifestyles, and the reason we feel so good. The reason up at 4:30, have the best nighttime routines, because recovery is everything to kind of ensure that we can wake up with a great mindset. And where we had brain fog, we have greater clarity. We have bad sleep, we have the best sleep. And where we were feeling shitty all the time, we now feel good. And I will always put it down to mushrooms, which is why I feel it's our calling. And it's our purpose, and there's no terminus point to this journey, I would say.
Well, I'm sure everyone's out to get the mushrooms now. I'm really thinking about all the different things I can use it for. And I definitely think education is key here. And you guys are very, very good at what you do. And your explanations are, well, you just make it so accessible and you get people excited about mushrooms, which is... incredible. Do we want to just touch on psychedelics?
Yes, I mean, it's been something that's been so, for many years, Annie and I sat with researchers, we have read so many papers. I think it's one of the greatest upsets that it's not in the consciousness of many of us, but fortunately enough, we're now experiencing, I would say, a psychedelia renaissance. There are so many institutions that have been given private funding to commence these kind of research on clinical trials to support how healing psychedelics are. There's over 200, 300 different strains of psychedelics, all of which are unbelievably healing. What it can do for those who suffer or experience, I'd say, certain symptoms such as depression, addiction. To see, as I've witnessed in some capacity, the healing and the breakthroughs. One thing I realize is, one, that we have a divine union with these mushrooms. The second thing is, from a psychedelics experience, if in the right site and setting with the right practitioners,
there are two legal location
in a legal location, soon to be ubiquitous. I do hope two things come out of it: courage and empathy. Personally, I think we should be spiking every leader with psychedelics. And remarkably, the results keep showing how profound and how healing it is. And there's an amazing chart that David Nutt, who used to work alongside Tony Blair in Labour before he got kicked out for saying something about MDMA, I think, publicly in the news. It shows you how toxic some of these extraordinary things are that are behind the counter. Like you can walk into a newsagent, buy a bottle of whiskey and kill yourself. These toxins exist right at the bottom, psilocybin, psychedelics, with no kind of drawbacks to it at all. The problem is it's been given such a bad rep for so many years from the Nixons in the 70s, even up until now, there's still a misconception, but there's some great pillars like Robin Cartwright Harris, Michael Pollan, even Joe Rogan, Lex Fridman, that are just trying to give us a platform so we can speak to those who are respected in their industries of clinical studies around psilocybin to allow us to hear the results and allow us to make our own decision about it. And there's a great book by Michael Pollans about how psychedelics can change your mind. There's a great book by Merlin Sheldrake about Life Entangled, which really allows us to understand the power of these, of psychedelics and also fungi. I believe at the moment that this psychedelic renaissance allowing to become a conversation without everyone being too scared, because the realization that you can cure something that's been, you know, whether it's PTSD or so forth, that you can actually have one session, and some people define it as in one session is like 10 years of therapy. Mm-hmm. And he used the most amazing analogy. I don't know if you can talk about
that. Thank you so much.
Well,
he's like, finally one to me.
I don't know which one he's talking about because there's loads of them, but
mostly lifted.
I'm gonna hazard a guess.
Yeah, right.
So one thing I sort of talk about is so with psychedelics, it's like getting an elevator and going to the top of Everest. And when you do that, you see what's possible with the human mind and where you can take it. Mm. And when you come back down, you're willing to do the work because you can see where the mind can go through transcendental meditation or breath work or any other sort of natural sources. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I think is quite incredible about psychedelics is kind of this whole idea of hacking flow state, you know. The idea, and I guess for people that, you know, don't know much about a flow state, but they recognize it as immediate as I explain it, is you probably experienced it a lot when you were writing your book.
Mm. yeah, I do.
Is that sort of like, is that sort of time where you feel your best and you perform at your best and you actually lose track of time and just all the answers just seem to be connecting. You get to that absolute flow and you just feel completely arrested by that moment.
Mm.
Nothing else matters. And what psilocybin, as an example, has the power to do is, there's part of your brain, it's called the prefrontal cortex, and it deals with, it's where you store sort of past traumas, whether they're minor, what you call them micro traumas or macro traumas,
yeah.
Sort of minor things someone said to you at school, or it might be something happened with a parent or whatever, it's all stored within there, and they're like, they can be triggered at any point. Then you've also got, kind of informed by traumas is like anticipation about the future, which is kind of where anxiousness comes from, anxiety comes from. It's this sort of predetermining the future. You know, Simon swims in the Serpentine Lake every other morning. I probably join him once a week. He's more mad than me. But you can easily walk up to the Serpentine Lake going, oh, what if there's something in there that's going to bite me?
Mm.
And you're like, oh, I don't want to do that. Mm. So the thing is that that's the whole thing about predetermining the future and just freezing. So what the psilocybin does, it knocks offline the prefrontal cortex, so you're no longer thinking about the signals going back and forth. You're just completely in the moment. It also dismantles the ego, which means you can start to have conversations with yourself about things that you typically might bat off or protect yourself from. There's a kind of a numbingness to it, which you can start to confront things from maybe the past in your life. And it's a lot more easier to do that. Are we allowed to say we've had some experiences before?
Yeah.
We've had some experiences before. And
not in this country.
not in this. there's a real kind of circus to the sort of input signals coming in. The visual aesthetics is incredible. There's two channels you often say. You can close your eyes or you can open your eyes and you see some really incredible visuals. But you know, you can close your eyes and you almost have this like voice of God that's having a conversation with you. You know, and you know, I've experienced enough to see what the power is and where you can go with it. And what's quite incredible is, like, you know, a lot of people have used it to actually cure drug addictions, to like from like cocaine and things like that. So it has actually the exact opposite to other drugs, and actually the day after a trip or a journey, you actually feel better. There's no come down, you feel better. They call it almost like an afterglow.
It releases a neurotransmitter, which is serotonin 2A, I can't think of the other technical name, but it fits in perfectly into part of the hemisphere, which basically increases this euphoric state. And other drugs, if taken inappropriately, like MDMA, so that it flushes out that serotonin, which is why you get the come down the next day. But psilocybin does the complete opposite. I mean, again, something so healing, yet so dismissed, because there's a sense of, you know, why? I mean, there are so many reasons why you could conspiracize the idea of why it's such a, why is it being dismissed from us?
I think there's lots of forces that are out there in terms of now considering it and taking it seriously as an alternative to mental health therapy.
The government have spoken very confidently about it. The UK.
Yeah.
In the UK. And it's the very first time.
Why not? When something, you know, in terms of conventional medicine is not working, or ECT therapy, as an example, isn't working, why not try another route? You know, MDMA actually used to be used in marriage counselling.
In the 1950s.
Really?
Albert Hoffman, I believe, established the, synthesised it. But then you look at, I was going to say that right now, I say the psychedelia renaissance because beyond the literature, there is the government, the FDA in America have funded, I believe, Matthew Johnson, who's a clinical psychologist and looking at addiction. They've funded him and his research team, I think, $5 million, which is still quite maybe a small amount, but it's just showing you they're nodding to the future, which I think is so important. And certainly there's a planetary anxiety at the moment. And I think we have to realize, one thing I've realized with mushrooms is that in the things that we've built with the company, is that we're not alone. We're all going through something. Yeah. I think that's the most important thing. And mushrooms heal.
Amazing. Well, thank you. I feel like we could honestly do a whole episode on psychedelics.
Yeah, I would love to do that one day.
We're going to need another hour.
Guys, thank you so much.
Thanks,
I don't.
We
don't have time to do the quickfire questions.
Oh, thank God.
Let's do one each. What is your most memorable book?
Oh, great question. Can I go first?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, inevitably, you tend to do that anyway, so there we are.
Oh, it's a choice between two. okay, so mine is, I think it's called I'll Sleep When I Die or something like that.
So memorable, you don't even know the name.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know the author. His name's Jerry Weintraub.
Have you heard of Jerry Weintraub? God, what a guy.
Yeah, so Jerry Weintraub is probably what I call like the OG hustler.
Right.
So he's someone who, I won't get too much into it because I know we're short on time, but he managed Frank Sinatra.
Yeah.
He was the promoter for Elvis. He's responsible for the Oceans movies, Oceans 11, 12, 13. In fact, he appears in one of them.
Yeah.
But he was one of these guys that kind of came from the outside and saw something he wanted and just went for it. So can I give one little anecdote really quickly about Elvis? So he wanted to promote Elvis. He wanted to put on an Elvis show, or at least he actually wanted to do the Elvis tour. So he basically got the number of Elvis's manager, who they called the Colonel, and he would call him every single day and said, I want to do Elvis's tour. And obviously the Colonel was like, I don't know who the fuck this guy is. And he just put the phone down and be like, absolutely not. And he did it every single day. And I think on day 365, I might be making this a bit more dramatic than it is, but day 365, he said, all right, if you can get me $1 million in cash, and it was something ridiculous, within like 48 hours, you can do the tour. So you can do one show. And so he was like, all right. And then he basically phoned every single person he knew. He was a real connector, a real networker. You know, you would connect with his energy a lot. And he called everyone he knew. And basically everyone turned him down. He was like, all these guys said they were going to be there for me, support me. This is Elvis. Like, why is no one backing me? He then fired a lawyer, I think. There was some like billionaire who was like in New York or something, and said that he loved Elvis. And basically said to him, all right, I'll back you, but I want 50% of your touring company. So he was like, you know, fuck it, do it.
No.
So he literally got a bag of like $1 million in cash. I don't know if it was a bag, but the point is he got the $1 million. The colonel couldn't believe it, gave him the show. He said, all right, if you pull this show off and you sell it out, you can get the tour. So he did the show. I feel like it was in Vegas or somewhere like that. It came to the night of the show, and I think there was like 10, 15% unsold. So he went to the local army. I don't know if it's called the local army. He went to the army and he basically bought them in, and they removed 15% of the chairs. So then when the colonel walked in, he said, I've sold it out. And he said, that's amazing. And he got the tour.
Wasn't it the round? It was the round. Was it? He did the round? Oh, no, that's Frank.
What?
Frank Sinatra.
Oh, yeah, the main event.
Yeah, the main event's amazing.
Amazing.
Joey Weintraub's a legend. Unfortunately, he's not with us now, but... he's someone, I love this idea of just relentless persistence. If you believe in something, just going for it. No matter what the barriers are in front of you. I kind of saw that a little bit in the Kanye documentary recently we were talking about before.
Yeah, you're going to have to watch that.
But yeah.
Oh, God.
And your book?
Was a recent book I actually recently read, a recent book I read, which was The Book of Joy. I read that. oh shit, were we supposed to say manifest?
No. It's like kicking us on the table.
Okay, go.
There's so many books. There's Andre Agassi's book, which has just blew me away. It's his autobiography, and I grew up, he was like a hero to see this superhero like take to the court, and nice to play county tennis, and seeing someone who's so relentless, so unconventional, just came onto the court, and he was a magician when he used to play Pete Sampras. I remember it was like a theater, it was like a Hollywood movie just watching him.
The thing I like you said about that book was he actually hated tennis.
He hated tennis. He was in excruciating pain. He had always back issues. And you know, interestingly enough, I don't know if you remember when you saw him on court, he had long hair, right? That was a hairpiece. His hair disappeared a long time ago, which played massive insecurity to him. To crack the door open into the world of someone you admire, because you know, we used to try and play like Agassi on the court. It's just because sometimes they say don't meet your heroes. Do you know that? This is one guy I would be in total awe to meet him based on this book. It's a book that I can't believe it's not a movie. It would inspire so many people, even if you weren't the generation of Agassi. He's so human and went through so many trials and tribulations that people would relate to. That was the book that kind of really, really did truly inspire me. There's many more, but that one recently I read and I loved it tremendously. I think he's a great guy.
Amazing.
And now we disappear.
Well, thank you so much. Thank you guys for joining me on The Moments That Made Me. And I'm sure we'll be doing something very soon.
Yeah, definitely.
I look forward to that.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Kayla Itzinas.
I'm Kayla Itzinas, and I have been training a global community of women since 2009. I've created a brand new podcast, Sweat Daily, to help you level up your life and reach your health and well-being goals. From fitness tips to food that fuels you, meditation to motivation, we've got you covered. Sweat Daily, the happiest, healthiest, and most confident version of you awaits. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.